सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादम् शङ्करं लोकशङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बालरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेदि मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः. प्रेयर वर्स वासुदेवेन्द्रयोगीन्द्रम् नत्वा ज्ञानप्रदं गुरुम् मुमुक्षूणां हितार्थाय तत्त्वबोधोऽभिधीयते. In the page 36, Tattvabodha is teaching us what we call the Mahavakya, the major statement in the Upanishads. That is Tattvamasi. Tattvamasi. Tat means that, Tvam means thou, Asi means art, that thou art, you are that. This is what? In the teaching of the Upanishad. This simple statement is called Mahavakya, is a major statement. And what it says is that, when say you are that, you see the pronoun that refers to something which is remote, you know, that house. So we don't say that pot, we say this pot. This book. So what is in front of us is generally referred to as this. What is remote is referred to as that. And thou, of course, means I, which is the most proximate. So I, who is the most proximate, I know that I am the self, I am the conscious being. But then I have this conclusion or complex that I am a limited being. So this is my understanding or my perception of myself, that I am no doubt a conscious being, but a limited being. Limited in every which way. In whichever way I think of myself, I see myself as a limited being. In the power, we have this threefold power. power to know, power to will, power to act. Jnana Shakti, Ichha Shakti, Kriya Shakti. Shakti means power. Jnana Shakti, power to know. We've been blessed with an intellect with which we can know. Power to will. We are blessed with a mind with which we can will, desire. Power to act. We are given the vital air, the organs of action with which we act. So that's how our life is. With the intellect we know. And more we know, more we understand how many desirable things are there. And so then from the knowledge arises a desire. If I think there is something desirable, that's my knowledge, then I desire that. From desire arises action. Therefore this threefold power is, but it's limited. I have knowledge but limited. I can will but limited. I can act but limited. My memory is limited. My grasping power is limited. My understanding is limited. My physical strength is limited. Everything is limited. And therefore, I constantly am aware that I am a limited being. And we have been saying all along that it is the sense of limitation of the I that makes me unhappy with myself. Somehow, I want to see myself as free from all limitations. So this inherent desire in me that I want to be limitless. I want to be complete. I want to be perfect. I always want to be right. I always want to succeed. You know, that's my desire. So, and then I find that what I am really is quite far from what I desire to be. Therefore, the inner dissatisfaction. So in that context we are told that thou art. You are constantly trying to become limitless. You are trying to become limitless. Trying to become complete. Trying to become perfect. Trying to become full or happy. Trying to become happy. Trying to become peaceful. So we are trying to become something all the time. I want to become bigger than what I am. How big do you want to become? There's no limit to what I want. So my life is constantly an endeavor to become limitless, to become complete, to become perfect. And regardless of what I do, I can never become limitless. You know why? Because becoming is as a result of an action. Suppose I am not wealthy enough, I do something to become wealthy, perform an action. But whatever action I perform is limited. You know, action is performed in certain time, in place, with certain capability. Every action is limited. And therefore, the result of action also is going to be limited. So I am limited now. Add something limited in me. The limited plus limited can never become limitless, isn't it? Regardless of what addition I do in myself, I can never become limitless. Any limited number plus other limited number can never become infinity. So this is a human struggle. For a human being, he wants to become limitless, wants to become complete, wants to become whole. But regardless of what he becomes, he finds himself limited anyway. He finds himself incomplete anyway. So is there ever an end to this struggle? Is there ever going to end this struggle? So Upanishad says that the word the limitless that you want to become, you already are. Like the tenth man is being told that you are the tenth man. The tenth man is searching for the tenth man. Can he ever find? Never. See, in this search for the tenth man, there is already a presumption that I am not the tenth man. When can you search for the tenth man? Only when you presume that you are not the tenth man. In him, somehow, this notion has arisen that tenth man is lost. They counted and counted nine and came to the conclusion that tenth man is lost. I am not the tenth man, so we have to search for tenth man. The only way that they can find tenth man is by this teaching, hey, you are the tenth man. Similarly, human being is constantly trying to search for happiness, for peace, for love, for completeness, for limitlessness, for freedom. And regardless of what we get, regardless of what we become, we can never become free. Only one kind of bondage is replaced by other kind of bondage. That's all happens. When I did not have a job, I was very unhappy. I was unemployed. Looking for a job all over. Somehow I found a job. I was very happy. So I am free from the bondage of unemployment. But now I have to wake up every morning at 6 o'clock and go to the factory at 7 o'clock and punch cars. And I can leave at 5 o'clock and come home 6 o'clock. And so the freedom that I had of getting up whenever I wanted, all that freedom is gone. Some gain is there, but you all have to pay the price for every gain. Nothing is free. So then I buy a scooter so that I can commute easily. Alright, scooter came. Then now and then scooter stops there, you get run out of gas. All kinds of problems there are. In short, in our life, every solution also brings problems. There is nothing that is a pure solution. Every solution also brings problems. We try to solve that problem, another solution comes, that brings a different kind of problem. That's how it's meant to be. Nothing right or wrong about it. That's what it is. And therefore, there is no end to the struggle of this human being. Therefore, he's told, just as the only way the struggle of the tenth man can come to an end is by recognizing that I am the tenth man. I already am what I am searching for. I already am what I am trying to become. Similarly also, we are told that thou art. You are there. You already are means what? Are reveals an existing fact. You will be that when you are told, that means that it will happen somewhere in future. But you are that means what? That statement reveals an existing fact about you, that you are that. What is that? That is remote. What I think is remote. See, when the tenth man is searching with the tenth man, he thinks the tenth man is away. It is that tenth man I am searching for. Because he thinks that tenth man is lost. Someone different from himself. And therefore, for the person who is searching with the tenth man is different, is remote. And so he's told, that thou art, that tenth man which you are searching for, thou already art. Similarly, Upanishad says, the limitlessness that you are searching for, you already are. You are limitless. You are happiness. You are complete. Something that we find extremely difficult to swallow, of course. Because of a conclusion that I am a limited being has become so deeply rooted that regardless of how many times I am told you are beautiful, you are limitless, it just doesn't sink into me. At one point, Shankaracharya says in Kathopanishad Bhashya, look at this fellow. Without being told that you are this fellow's son and you are this fellow's father and you are this fellow's... He takes all of this without being told. But even when he is told a number of times that you are Brahman, you are limited, he doesn't accept it. That's called Maya. Look at the impact of Maya or ignorance that is there on everybody. And that's the reason why we have to expose ourselves to this teaching again and again. Because the impact is required again and again and again. Because our conclusions about ourselves are so deeply rooted that the mind immediately goes back to the old rut. While we are in the influence of teaching, momentarily sometimes we come free, we find that everything is fine. As soon as you put on your shoes, everything comes back. Somebody asked Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, sir, they say that when you take a dip in the Ganges, all your sins are gone. And we find the fellows are the same after taking dips in the Ganges. What's happening? So Paramahamsa said that when you take a dip, take out your clothes and put it on the ghat, you know, on the steps. Take the dip. When you take the dip, all your sins leave you, but they get stuck to your clothes. As soon as you were put on, they all come back. Similarly, when we are in this Ganga, it's called Jnana Ganga. We are taking a dip in the Ganges of knowledge. And very often we feel so good. And it makes sense, yes. I have to be limited, limitless. But then all our problems, I guess, go and stick to our shoes. And as soon as we wear them, they all come back. Going back to the old. That's why, again and again. So even in Chandogya Upanishad, where we find this major statement, Tattvamasi, that thou art, the disciple is being told 9 times. You know, same thing. He said, Tattvamasi, that thou art. But sir, this is doubt in my mind. Please explain to me again. 2nd time. Still I have another doubt like this. Please explain to me again. 9 times he's told. Then he got settled. Anyway, so to understand this simple statement made up of 3 words, Tat Tvam Asi, that thou art. 3 words are there. So we should understand each of these words properly, correctly. So what do Upanishads do? They are nothing but an elaboration on the meaning of these 3 words. Tat, Tvam, Tat stands for that. Brahman, Ishvara or God, who is limitless, who is complete, who is happiness, whom you are... So this, it will be interesting. If we see in our life what it is that we are searching for, that we are searching for is very clear, because we are desiring constantly, you know. One after desire arises, every desire reveals that I want something. So what do I want? Answer is very simple. What happiness? Then suppose we ask you, how much happiness do you want? This much happiness? This much? Or that much? Answer will be, I want boundless happiness. Next question will be, how long do you want to be happy? A few minutes a day? Half an hour a day? 1 hour a day? Answer will be, no, I want 24/7. If I had my way, I mean, when you have to ask for it, why don't you ask exactly what you want? I want boundless happiness 24/7, at all the times. Suppose we are told that as long as you are in this place, you'll be happy. As soon as you leave here, you'll be miserable. That is not acceptable. Out of happy, not only at all the times, but also at all the places, under all the conditions, at home, at place of work, in the marketplace, wherever I go, wherever I am, with whoever I am, whether it's my boss, whoever it is, I want to be happy at all times, at all places, under all conditions. Is it not so? There cannot be an exception to this. Everybody wants this. Rich or poor, young or old, man or woman, everybody wants this. So Vedantin says, look, you want happiness, which is ananda. That ananda, you want it to be always there. So what is always there is called sat. You want sat ananda. Another good question can be that we'll give you an injection. You'll be in coma and you will enjoy that ananda. They say, no, I want to be happy and consciously happy, not unconsciously happy. So happiness must be there, consciousness must be there. You should do it all the times. All the times is called sat. Consciousness is called chit. Happiness is called ananda. So sat chit ananda. What are we searching for? Sat chit ananda. If you look at all the desires can also be classified in three categories. You have countless desires, but they can be classified in three categories. One is the desire to live a day longer. Desire to live a day longer. Is it not? Nobody wants to die. There is natural love for life. Should be there also. Every living being has a natural love for life. Everybody wants to live. Nobody has love for death. There is love for life. If somebody wants to die, that can only be because the living has become so painful and the person sees no hope of becoming free from pain, therefore the person may say, God, please take me away. So not only do you want to live, but live happily. So everybody wants to live one day longer. Even old 90-year-old person, you know, woman says, are you ready now? No, no. I have to see my great-grandchild's wedding or something like that. See? Some desires are there, ambitions are there. This is natural. Love for life, love for existence. Is it not so? And how much is all done? all gyms and all kinds of yoga, all kinds of things and all whole medical science, everything is all because we want to live a day longer. They say that in a country like United States, of the medical expenses, major expense is in keeping people alive who are beyond 90 and beyond. Keeping them alive, you know, with all kinds of support equipment is so expensive because they want to live. You cannot deny them the right to live. Anyway, so desire to be. Then desire to be happy. So all entertainment industry, because you want to be happy, so then they entertain us by all kinds of televisions and WhatsApps and cell phones, all kinds of things. All of that would not exist if we did not want entertainment, isn't it? And third, we want knowledge, we want to know. The whole newspaper and publishing industry all thrives only because of our desire to know. Desire to be, desire to know, and desire to be happy. Desire to be means to be sat. Desire to know, to be chit. Desire to be happy ananda. So life is nothing but a constant endeavor of sat chit ananda. That is called God. That is called Brahman, that is called Ishvara. So what do you want in us? Even the people who do not accept Ishvara. Now there is a fashion to be atheist, you know. They declare that we are atheist, and then there is some kind of a association or group and all kinds of things that are going on. And then they pride themselves in dismissing God. Anyway, but then if they understood what we mean by God, they dismiss the God who is in heaven, etc., that is okay. But God that Vedanta presents is what? Is Satchit Ananda, which in fact plays a role in our life every moment. There is not a moment that is free. When we are free from desire for Satchit Ananda, there is not a moment, isn't it? No moment of, you know, when we are aware, when we are sleeping, there is no desire. And waking and dream, desires are there. And every desire is desire for sat chit ananda. Either sat or chit or ananda. So can we say that I don't accept God? Can we say that I don't need God in my life? All that really matters to me is God. If God is understood as Satchit Ananda. Is it not so? And so human life is an endeavor in search of Satchit Ananda. And in that search we go to a variety of species also. Even human life I could not find it, I'll become a dog and a cat. 88.4 million different species are there. God has created so many embodiments, so we can keep searching and searching. There are 14 worlds, 7 up and 7 down. I'm sure that we have traveled everywhere. Because this search is going on from the time beginningless. And if that search does not get over in this lifetime, then I am going to continue my search in another embodiment. Since when is the search going on? From the time beginningless. How long will it go on? As long as I am ignorant. And as long as ignorance is there, it will always go on. So Vedanta says that, look, you are Satchidananda. You are limitless. You are happiness. You are wholeness. You are completeness. You are. What does it mean? It means that it reveals an existing fact about me. Are is a verb of present tense, isn't it? You will be if you say, then it will be a verb of future. You were if you say, the verb of past. You are is verb of present. So if I am limitless, what should I do? Look at yourself and see this, discover this fact about yourself. So Vedanta is inviting us to discover this fact about ourselves. So, then the question has always been asked, if I am limitless, how come I am feeling limited? If I am happiness, how come I am feeling unhappy? If I am sat or immortal, how come I feel I am mortal? To explain that, Vedanta gives us a model, gives an example. So, let us go to page 36 and read that first sentence. स्थूलशरीराभिमाने जीवनामकं ब्रह्मप्रतिबिम्बं भवते स एव जीवः प्रकृत्या स्वस्मात् ईश्वरं भिन्नत्वेन जानाते. Look at the translation. Sthula Sharir Abhimani. See the first word in translation? The one who is identified with the gross body. Abhimani, one who is identified. Sthula Sharir. Sharira means body. Sthula Sharir is the gross body. Sthula Sharira Abhimani. Abhimani, the one who is identified with Sthula Sharira, the gross body. Next word, Jiva Namakam. Nama means name. So called Jiva. The one who is called Jiva. Brahma Pratibimbam Bhavati. You know, Pratibimba and Pratibimbam. Image and reflection. You know, what is seen in the mirror is called Pratibimba. Reflection. I am the bimba, the image. And what we see in the mirror is Pratibimba, reflection. So, Brahma Pratibimbam, the reflection of Brahman. Brahman is the image. And Pratibimba is reflection. Brahma Pratibimbam, reflection of Brahma. So when I stand in front of the mirror, what do I see? My own reflection. Who am I? I am the image. And what I see in the mirror is the reflection. So now here we are told that there is a reflection of Brahma. And Brahma is standing in front of the mirror as though. Brahma is image, Brahman is image, and what you see in the mirror is the reflection. So who is the reflection? Jiva Namakam. This Jiva is the reflection of Brahma. Who is Jiva? You and I. You and I are called Jiva. Called Jivatma or Jiva. The limited being, the limited self, the individual self also is called Jiva. This name, the word you must have heard, Jiva. Jivatma. So, you and I are what? Jiva. Various Jivas are there. Who are we? Brahma Pratibimbam Bhavati. What we call Jiva is the Pratibimba, the reflection of Brahma. It's interesting, this model is called a reflection model to explain our life. This example of reflection is given to explain why we are feeling about ourselves what we are feeling. How come we feel limited? How come we feel unhappy, agitated? It's because the nature of reflection is governed by the reflecting medium. Take for example sun, which is shining in the sky. Imagine that the sun gets reflected in a bucket of water. You know, that happens very often, isn't it? Place a bucket of water in this roof, the sun will be reflected. If this water is dirty, would you know how the reflection look like? The reflection will be dull. This is not so. If the water is muddy or dirty, then the reflection of sun would look dull. Even the sun is bright and shining, the reflection looks dull. Suppose surface of the water is wavy, is moving, then you know what the reflection would look like? Shaking. The water surface is shaking, the reflection also looks shaking. Have you ever seen your own reflection in a wash basin? Sometimes water is filled up, your face looks moving. Is water that is moving? The reflection does not move, but the movement of water creates the notion that the reflection is moving. So sun is steady, reflection is unsteady. Sun is bright, reflection is dull. Sun is vast, reflection is as big as a bucket, right? So the nature of reflection is governed not by a sun, the image, it is governed by water, which is the reflecting medium, you understand? When we are in front of a mirror, the reflection in the mirror will be governed not by my face, governed by the mirror. Sometimes mirror is somewhat wavy. Have you ever come across that? I do that sometimes, your face looks funny. In India, when you go to buy a mirror, make sure that you know that it is flat. Sometimes otherwise, that's why we used to do this. When the mirror is wavy, then your face also looks funny, then you know that this is not a straight mirror. If mirror is distorted, the face appears distorted. There's a crack in the mirror, your face will appear with a crack, is it not so? Even though there is no crack on my face, the reflection appears having a crack. Even though my face is symmetrical, if the mirror is curved, my face also will appear distorted, is it not so? Meaning that the nature of reflection is determined not by what is reflected, but is determined by the medium of reflection. Is that clear? In case of sun, reflecting medium is water, that determines how the reflection will look like. In our case, reflecting medium is mirror. So if you are in front of a concave mirror, you may look like fat, chubby fellow. Convex mirror, you look like tall something. Isn't it so funny? So how the reflection looks is determined not by what is reflected, not by the image. Reflected by the, is determined by the reflecting medium. Now just for a moment imagine that sun is looking at its own reflection and concludes that, oh, I'm dull, I'm shaking, a man staring, you imagine sun, looking at the reflection, comes to this conclusion, because know that that is I. Suppose sun thinks that I am that reflection. Then what does sun conclude? I am dull. I am unsteady. I am small. Is it not so? Similarly, Brahman looks at the reflection. So what is the reflecting medium here? The reflecting medium is really called Maya or avidya or ignorance. Our mind. Our mind is the reflecting medium. Brahman gets reflected in our mind. So if the mind is dull, the reflection will be, suppose mind is impure. Our mind is a reflecting medium. If the mind has Radha Dvesha, the impurities, then the reflection will also appear impure, is it not so? Brahman is consciousness, ever pure, but getting reflected in mind which is impure, then inasmuch as the nature of reflection is governed by the reflecting medium, even though Brahman is ever pure, because of impurity of the mind, the reflection will appear impure, is it not so? The mind is wavy, restless. Reflection also will appear restless. The mind is small. Reflection also will appear small. Mind is limited. Reflection also will appear limited. Understand this. Brahman is limitless. Satchidananda, ever existing, ever conscious, ever complete, ever limitless, ever pure. That's Brahman. Brahman such as that gets reflected in my mind. But my mind is a small little entity. The reflection also is very small, is very limited. The mind has impurities. So Brahman also looks impure. The mind is restless, so reflection also looks restless. So what does this passage say? Jiva-namakam brahma-pratibimbam bhavate. What we call jiva, the individual self, is like a reflection of Brahman. Brahman reflected in the mind is called jiva. Jiva means individual self. Now, how that jiva, the reflection, looks like is determined by the reflecting medium, which is mind. So then, when I look at myself, which is the reflection of Brahman, I am nothing but Brahman, really. Brahman's reflection is really Brahman, but the way it appears is determined by the mind. My mind is small, therefore I look upon myself as a small entity. The mind is impure, I look upon myself as an impure entity. The mind is restless, I look upon myself as a restless entity. You see why we have this complex of ourselves? The question is, how come when limitlessness is my nature, Brahman is my nature, how come I find myself limited? When happiness is my nature, how come I find myself unhappy? Because mind is unhappy, therefore reflection is unhappy. Mind is limited, so reflection is limited. Mind is impure, so reflection is impure. Mind is restless, so reflection is restless. So what do I think I am? I am a restless fellow. I am impure. I am incomplete. I am limited. In time, place, condition, I'm suffering from a sense of limitation. Suffering from a sense of restlessness. Suffering from a sense of impurity. That is what we take ourselves to be. So this model called reflection, seeks to explain the reason why we feel about ourselves the way we feel. It's a model. So Brahman looks at the reflection and concludes, Brahman says, I am limited, I am restless, I am impure, I am unhappy. Just as the sun, looking at the reflection, concludes that I am dull, I am wavy, I'm changing, moving, small. Similarly, this is how we think about ourselves. So says, Jivanamakam Brahma Pratibimbam Bhavati. But one more word is added. Sthula Sharira Abhimani. Identified with this body. So Brahman, identified with the body, becomes as big or as small as the body. Atma is Brahman. You and I are Brahman. But you identify with this body, mind, sense complex. And therefore, you become as big or as small or as limited as this body, mind, sense complex. So this model is meant to explain why we feel the way we feel. Why does the limitless self feel a sense of limited? Why does the happy self feel a sense of unhappiness? Why which is ever pure feels impure? Why which is ever silent feels that it is restless? Because of identification of the mind and the body. Then, same passage, the next sentence is, Seva jivaha prakritya swasmat ishvaram vinnatvena janate. So we are all reflections. Imagine now the sun with hundreds of buckets on the roof. Imagine. How many reflections are there? As many reflecting media are there, so many reflections, even though sun is one. Each one of us is what? A mirror or reflecting medium. Our own mind becomes a reflecting medium for Brahman. So as many jivas are there, as many minds are there, as many reflections are there, therefore reflections are countless. What is reflected is one. Reflections are countless. Understand, one important thing is, what is the true nature of the reflection? Even though in the bucket the reflection is small, it is wavy, it is dull, what's the true nature of the reflection? The image is the true nature of reflection. Because the impurities appear, these are all apparent, smallness is apparent, not the true nature of the reflection. Impurity is not the true, it's all due to water. The reflection itself is ever pure, is true to its true nature as sun, so that waviness, the unsteadiness, the smallness, the impurity, the dullness, all of these are apparent, not the true nature. See, when you see yourself in the mirror, and your face looks distorted, you know very well that distortion is only wrong, is not right. In Vedanta there is a superimposition, that actually the waviness, that distortion is not my true nature. Is something that is incidental, something superimposed because of the nature of mirror. But my face, in fact, is straight. It's not distorted. Similarly, reflection also, because of water, the dullness, water makes the reflection look dull. Water makes the reflection look unsteady. Water makes the reflection look small. Water makes the reflection look like that, even though reflection itself is bright. Reflection itself is steady. Reflection itself is round. You follow? As I said, in the wash basin also, when our face appears shaky, understand the reflection does not shake. Reflection is steady. Because the water is shaking, therefore the face looks shaking. Have you sometimes experienced this? That if you are sitting in a boat, even the boat is steady, if the water is flowing, you feel that you are also flowing. Once, many years ago, when we went to Isis, at a lake, vast lake, and we with our car we went all the way to the lake, and in the water, just as you know, the superficial water. But you know, we thought because the water was the waves coming and going, feel that the car is moving. So how the water creates an appearance of movement in you, even though you are not moving. Similarly, the reflection is not moving, but the water makes it appear moving. Reflection is not dull, the water makes it appear dull. So we are not limited. Our mind makes us appear limited. We are not restless. Our mind makes us appear restless. We are not dull. The mind makes us appear dull. We are not impure. The mind makes us appear impure. You follow? The impurity is in the mind, the smallness is in the mind, the limitedness is in the mind, the waviness is in the mind, the unsteadiness is in the mind. But because the consciousness is reflected in the mind, therefore the mind makes the consciousness, ourselves, appear as having all those limitations and distortions, which we take to be real. When you look at the mirror, you know that your face is not distorted. You don't take the distortion real because you have the knowledge of your face, you know. But if you did not have knowledge, suppose there's a child who doesn't know. You take the child before a concave mirror or something, looks very fat, the fellow will think that I have become like this. I mean, if you don't know the true nature, then you take the appearance as real. Since in case of our face, we know what our face is, therefore regardless of what the appearance is in the mirror, we don't take it to be real. We laugh at it. We dismiss it. We negate it. It's called negation. In this case, unfortunately, we do not know our true nature, therefore we take ourselves to be what we appear in the reflecting medium, namely mind. So Upanishad says, that is not you. Therefore, just as when you look at the mirror and the distortion that appears in the mirror, what do? You negate it in your mind and you still see yourself as straight, you know. Even though the mirror shows our face distorted, in our mind's eye, we see our face as it is. Is it not so? In the mind's eye. This eye sees a funny reflection there. In the mind's eye, you know that all this distortion is unnatural, is superimposition. It doesn't belong to me. So in my mind, I negate that and then see my face. When an actor has put on a costume of beggar and then we see that on the stage, when we recognize the actor, how do we recognize? In the Gurukulam, you know, in the children's program, the cultural program, when a child is acting there as Rama, as Krishna, as Ravana, as Kumbhakarna, as whatever. If the other people feel that he is Duryodhana or Kumbhakarna, but how do I see? I look at see my own child. In my mind, I negate that costume and see the child. Is it not so? Why? How can you negate? Because your costume is what? Is incidental. Is not inherent. Is not natural. Is incidental. Now I negate it. Similarly also, whatever is incident in ourselves, if you negate it, what is incidental? Coming, not permanent, coming and going. So whatever is incident in ourselves, if you negate, then we know who we are. Please tell me, the sense of limitedness that we feel, is it our nature or is it incidental? You know, because there are moments when we feel freedom from limitation. There are moments. When some very pleasant experience happens. You are ecstatic. Sometimes you are so ecstatic, you are so happy. You never expected that your basketball team will win, ever. So what is Toronto's basketball team is what? Raptors. What is raptor? Some Canadian name. Raptors.
Okay.
Dinosaur. Oh, okay. So you never expected, you know? But you root for it. And all of a sudden something happens in the final where the underdogs, the Raptors, somehow they win. And then you have almost heart attack. You're just extremely happy, so happy that you can't describe it. In that moment you just lose yourself. So that is the moment when we become free from all limited. That's one moment. When we are not even aware of our individuality. You hug somebody, you do something, you know, and funny, which you normally would not do. When people get too overjoyed, you know, they do all kinds of things, which normally they may not do. That's true that I have forgotten myself. All my sense of individuality, all sense of limitation is gone. There's one moment of experience of what? Freedom from limitation. Understand? The question is, does that one moment reveal the truth of myself? Or all the millions of moments where I feel miserable and unhappy, do they reveal my true nature? Or that one moment which reveals the happiness about me, what is my true nature? Can you believe? Can you tell me? All the time I'm a sad person. Some people have many complexes, you know, and that one, this fellow never laughs. Well, Swami used to tell this, you know, yeah, his teeth are all protruding and therefore he's quite ashamed of them, and so he always avoids it. Even if he just always puts his hand on the face, doesn't do so. Because he's always very self-conscious. Even that fellow also, you know, tell a slapstick joke. He's not conscious, he laughs, then he may put his, but momentarily become unconscious of himself. This man says to his servant, hey, go and, you know, water the plants. Go out and water the plants. Servant says, but sir, it is raining right now. He says, take your umbrella and go, you know. So when somebody says, all of a sudden you laugh, then you realize that, oh, I'm laughing, and then you can cover your face. But that for that moment, he became free from his self-consciousness. He became free. The self-conscious binds him. What is self-conscious? Identification of the body. It's called self-consciousness. Binds him. Momentarily becomes free from that. So there are moments of freedom for everybody. When you laugh, when you lose yourself, there may be once in a, I don't know, once in a day, once in a week, once in a month, I don't know. But Vedanta says that that moment reveals the truth about you. If you want to meditate upon yourself, recall that moment which actually happened to you, when momentarily you were so happy, you lost yourself. Remind yourself of that moment and recreate that moment in your mind and tell yourself, this is I. Not the sad, unhappy person that I normally appear to be. Not the limited, needy person that I appear to be. That's not the reality about me. That freedom is a reality about me. You know why? Because that time everything drops off. All identification drops off. And all sense of limitation that came from identity, it all drops off. And I experience the freedom which is my nature. It's not knowledge, it's experience. It can become knowledge with Vedanta. Vedanta says that is your nature. And therefore, visualize yourself and see that that's what you are. So, sthula sharira abhimani, because we are habitually identified with our body, that's called self-conscious. He is a very self-conscious person. When we say, you know, means he is a strong identity with the body. I measure myself as much as my body is. My body is tall, I am tall. My body is short, I am short. My body is fair, I am fair. My body is this. It's complexes. And these complexes make us miserable. Our Swami says when there is identity in the body, every part of the body creates complex. From head to toe, every part creates complex. Whether the hair or not, begin from there. What's the color of the hair? What's the density of the hair? Except from beginning from there. To how my nose is, how my eyebrows are, how the eyelids are, how the eye color. Everything is complex. The beauticians are minting money only because of that. Because of our self-consciousness, because of the complexes that we entertain on account of identity of the body. Plastic surgeons have a good time. They keep on repairing the noses and lips and things of the people, you know. It's one thing that a person is injured and therefore needs plastic surgery. But all people who are normal, you know, it's a fashion among certain circles. Have you been to plastic surgeon? No, then that means, you know. You're not modern. Who is your nerd? What is it? The shrink they call it. To go to a therapist also is a fashion. Who is your shrink? So sthula sharira abhimani. When I identify with something, I become as big as that or as small as that. As I said, when I identify with my team loses, I become very sad. Although I don't even know how to hit a basketball. I've never held it in my hand. But still, the win of the basketball team is my win. And loss of the basketball team is my loss. That is called identification. So when I identify with the gross body, I become as big as my body. As limited, unfortunately the body is limited. The body had a birth, the body will have death. Every year the body has what we call the birth date. So every year I celebrate birth rate. Whose birth rate? Who was born? I was born. Who was born? The body was born. Who am I? See, one interesting thing is, we can never be witness to our birth. We can never be witness to our death also. Isn't it? For being witness of birth, you must be present before the birth. Then only you can witness. For witnessing death, you must be present after the death, which you cannot be. So that I was born is a kalpana in my mind. That I will die also is another imagination in my mind. Yes, body is born, body grows old, body has disease, body dies. I say, I was born, I am old, I am growing old. My body is now slowly debilitating, I am going to die. And you suffer. As you said, because you love for life, and the body is going to die, I know that. So constantly the fear of death is there. So fear of disease is there. Fear of old age is there. So when wrinkles come on face, you know, another plastic, you know, other fellows are there. Oh, what a makeup is there, you know. We apply that. Nothing wrong in it. What I'm saying is that it's okay. It's good to look beautiful. I mean, I think that's a good idea. But the complex in my mind, I suffer from that. Our Swami used to give an example that this lady, this woman goes to a party and there are wrinkles on her face, so she applies some kind of a thing which she knows that it will last for 3 hours. So party will be for 2 hours. Sometimes party, you know, goes on longer than she's concerned. Every moment she just picks out a mirror and sees, you know. The Swami says, you can hide your wrinkles, but you can never hide the knowledge that you have wrinkles. It is not wrinkles that make me unhappy. The knowledge that I have wrinkles, that's what makes me unhappy. Identification of the wrinkles makes me unhappy, not wrinkles. Sthula sharira abhimani. So belly creates another complex. Everything creates complex. Weight creates complex. What is it? Body mass index or what? BMI? Body mass index. Every day I keep on measuring myself on that weighing machine. Every day I calculate what is the body mass index. It becomes, you know, we become paranoid with certain things. Keep on measuring calories and vitamins and protein. This and kimba, this, that, you know, eat. Yesterday she was offering me this chapati made of ragi, you know. I said, don't give me that stuff. So it's good for you. Good for me, but I don't like it anyway. I eat what I like, not what is good for me. So people are so crazy, all kinds of things they eat. Kimba, you know. Ragi. These things have never had any existence before, or they never had any importance. Now they become worldwide important things. So when you special rice for diabetic, you know, because it takes a long time to... that means it doesn't get digested for a long time, that's what it means, you know. He never eats that kind of stuff. Gross body identification, you know, constantly creates so many complexes. Then add into that, when body, you are identified with gross body, it also means that you are identified with the subtle body also. It means identified with the mind, with sense organs. So problems. My eyes don't see well, and the other I feel. I don't see well. What did you say? Don't hear well. Complex. So this is going to slowly hearing and seeing and walking. It's quite all right. Our Swami says that's all right. Celebrating, what was the 84th birthday or something, 83rd birthday or something like that in Salisbury. He says, well, the wrinkles are earned, he says, you know. They don't come just like that. You don't have them. I have them. So wrinkles don't come like that. They're earned. Wrinkles show my experience, my maturity. If they do. Wrinkles don't always show. But then, if you earn them, then we grow. Normally we age. Some people grow also. Aging is one thing. Growing is another thing. Most people age. Some people grow along with aging.
So these wrinkles are earned. So he's proud of his wrinkles. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine somebody is happy about the wrinkles? Because wrinkles show my maturity, my growth. But otherwise, most people suffer from all limitations of the body. Identification creates in me a sense that all limitations belong to me. So this is called jiva. He is like a reflection. So reflection word should not be taken in literal sense. Okay? Not that Brahman is there and then it gets reflected and reflecting medium, etc. That requires duality. Normally sun is there, reflection is here. So we don't have to take every element of that example. What is important is what aspect we should take is how the nature of reflection is determined by the reflecting medium. Similarly, when we say that Brahman is reflected in our mind, the reflection is determined by nature of reflection, how reflection appears. See, reflecting medium doesn't change the reflection, it makes it appear that way. The water is unsteady, reflection is not unsteady. Water is dull, reflection is not dull. Water makes reflection appear dull, understand that. The water does not change the reflection. Even though the reflection appears dull, the dullness does not belong to reflection, dullness belongs to water. The reflection appears unsteady, unsteadiness does not belong to reflection, it belongs to water. But water makes a reflection appear as unsteady. Water makes a reflection appear as dull, as dirty. Similarly, not that Brahman becomes jiva, but the mind which is limited makes Brahman appear as jiva, appear as limited. Appear as restless, appear as unhappy. So, this is how Vedanta seeks to explain to us why we feel about ourselves the way we feel. How come that when I am limitless, how come I feel limited? Because mind, which is a reflecting medium in which Brahman gets reflected, the mind is limited. Therefore, it makes me feel limited, appear limited, not even make me limited. So even when I take myself limited, I'm not limited. That's a saving grace. Just as even when the tenth man thinks that he's lost, he's not lost, right? Similarly, even when I think that I'm limited, I'm not limited. I think I'm insignificant, I'm not insignificant. I think I am mortal, I am not mortal. This is how my personality makes me appear. All I need to do is what separates appearance from reality. You follow? That's called viveka. Appearance from, just as when we look at our son acting on the stage, we separate in our mind his costume from who he is. Similarly, all these are the limitations belong to costume, not to the self. So that is why this description is given here. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. In this model also, when we realize that all the limitations are appearances, limitations belong to the reflecting medium, the mind, subtle body. Then I can be witness to all the limitations. When I do not identify the limitations, then I can be a witness. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti.
शांतिः शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ